compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I hope you enjoyed your 21-hour break. We're going to get right back to it. That includes your phone calls. If you want to dial me up, call me at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Before we hit the phones, real quick, Halloween is not that far away. And, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, so in the 60s, and a Ute in the 70s. And we would hear stories, and I guess they were even maybe on the news, and about like people putting razor blades into candy apples to hurt kids, or people putting other foreign objects or poison in candy. And I remember there was sort of a craze where parents would make the kids, at least my parents did, like, you got to unwrap it first before you can eat it. And maybe that's because of the stories. And I don't know whether any of these stories were really true or not. Were they wives' tales? I don't know. I guess there must have been some truth to it. Cyrus, did you ever have anything like that when you were a Ute?
Oh, yeah. There was a big scare of razor blades and apples and stuff. So if there was, if you got any candy that wasn't wrapped,
From the manufacturer?
Right. It went right in the garbage.
Yeah. Did you ever find a razor blade in anything you got on Halloween?
No, I never found anything good. The best thing I ever found was a full-size candy bar.
Ah, now you're talking. Did you remember what house that was so you could go back there next
you
year?
You better believe I did. In fact, we would swap costumes or turn. We'd put a jacket over our costume.
The same night.
We'd go back. We'd hit that house as many times as we could.
By the time I was about 12, I was, when you're a kid, you have the little plastic pumpkin that they put the candy in.
This is bringing back memories.
Sometimes it'd be like a bag, almost like the size of a gift bag. But by the time I was 12, I was using a pillow case because that can hold a lot more. And I would see some kids with sleeping bags. That was their bag to go get candy, and they would just be going for hours. I never used a sleeping bag, though. I did use pillowcases.
Yeah, pillowcases, because it can support all that weight, too, because it gets heavy.
If you're an enterprising young person and you have a large enough neighborhood, you can get quite a bit of candy. So the reason I'm bringing this up, although I don't remember ever knowing anybody who ever got hurt by something that they got from the Halloween handouts, I do remember those stories. And here's a new story that's out. This is in Pennsylvania. They're warning about pot candy. And there's a picture in this article. You can see that some of these candies have the marijuana leaf on it. Fred Heron, he's a police director of public safety at a town in Pennsylvania, Bensalem. He says, there are a lot of sick and evil people out there. This is the world we live in. Bensalem police reported that officers conducted a traffic stop earlier in September and confiscated what looked like normal candy. However, the items that looked like Sour Patch Candies, Cheetos, Sweet Tarts, all contained weed, or THC if you want to be more clinical. Bensalem police said the suspect bought the snacks in California and planned to sell them here in Pennsylvania. Who knows where these things could have wound up, said Heron. People think they're funny and they're going to put them in Halloween bags and not realize you could have a child now that could have a reaction to it. A parent in the area, Tony Harper, she says she had a hard time differentiating the fake ones from the real things. She says that's horrifying to think that you have all these little children running around. A lot of them don't even check their candy before they get home. Police advise parents to inspect their children's candies and look for anything that appears off. Heron said, they don't look like the regular type of candies you'd buy in a grocery store or a candy store, but it's enough similar that if the parent isn't checking properly or if a kid decides he's hungry on the Halloween trail, he might reach in and open a bag of what appears to be Cheetos, but they're not. So be aware. You know, why would people do that? I mean,
this is a lot like the razor blade story. Mm-hmm. People aren't going to do that.
That guy did.
Was that a real thing? The razor blade was a real thing?
Well, no, I don't know about that. I mean, I remember, and this is a childhood memory, so it could be faulty, But I think I remember that in the late 60s or maybe early 70s, there seemed to be reports on the TV news about incidents. You know, they found a razor blade in an apple. So mm-hmm. be careful, parents, or yeah. something like that. But I just don't remember well enough. We'd probably have to fact check that. Well,
I don't know. This all falls into that, you know, fear. People love, news loves making everybody scared. And this seems, this just doesn't feel right to me. I don't know. I'm not buying mm-hmm. it. I don't think.
I don't.
It always be careful. I mean, always look at what your kids are bringing home, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not overly worried about this particular story. I don't think stoners are throwing their you know their expensive weed candy to kids. Like that's
all right. Well, I'll see you're not worried about it and raise you one. The Beatles got hooked on not hooked, but they started using acid because I think it was John Lennon's dentist spiked their tea with acid as a joke one time.
Yeah, that is not funny.
Not funny, no. I mean, I'm not trying to manufacture outrage here, but yeah. I mean, so just be aware. That's all, I guess.
Yeah, we should always be careful. When it comes to anything we're taken from strangers, I mean, look at it first.
Not everything that glitters is gold.
That's right.
One final thought on that is that what Nancy and I would do for Halloween with our kids. And yes, we let them go trick-or-treating, and we did all that, so I have nothing against that. I mean, obviously, we would never let them dress up as anything evil. They could not dress up as, you know, witches or devils or anything like that. What we did was the kids would dress up as Catholic saints, St. Michael the Archangel, Pope John Paul II, and Nancy would make these elaborate costumes. Mother Teresa, my daughters were Mother Teresa more than once, and it was just a great way to do a little evangelization where the people handing out candy were used to seeing skeletons and whatever the other costumes were. And then they'd see these kids and they were dressed like the Pope or St. Michael the Archangel. And it made for some interesting conversations, which we thought was kind of cool. 888-914-9149. Let's start off in Huntington Beach, California and talk to Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. Yeah. Got a question for you. It's kind of a broad one that maybe you can give me specific on how to start. A friend of mine who I want to get closer to says, well, before you can do that, you in her opinion is that I really haven't gotten with God good enough or, you know, with Jesus. I've kind of strayed away from the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I started reflecting that as I was driving home from work last night. And it's like, okay, she's right. So my question to you, Patrick, is how do I get back on track? What's the first couple of steps with God and Jesus? Because I've really never gave it that much of a contemplation until she told me that mm-hmm. I really don't have God in my life or Jesus.
Well, what a very good thing for her to do, to give you that encouragement. So a few questions that will help me answer your question. Are you Catholic, or what is your background religiously?
Well, my mom brought me up First Church of Christ, and I was never baptized. And when the pastor changed, I was about 8 or 9 years old. She didn't like the new one, so she quit going to church. So basically, I really haven't had much involvement with the church after about age 8.
Okay, well, that would explain a lot then, right? Because if your mom sort of bailed on any religious training for you, then you were left in the lurch. I'm sorry to hear that. But this is, you know, this is the day that we can begin again. So here is my advice. I'm gonna offer you an explanation that's based upon what I believe to be the fullness of the faith, something more and even better than the good things that you may already have that you're thinking about, well, you know, a Bible study, that's good. Going to church on Sunday, that's good. Praying, good. All these things are good. But I'm going to propose to you something even better than that because it's more complete. And that is that you start praying, of course, and start looking into the Catholic Church as the church that Jesus established. And this so that you can not only be baptized, and all of your sins will be wiped away in baptism, and all the effects of your sins, I don't know how old you are, but however many sins you may have committed in your whole lifetime since you've never been baptized, once you're baptized, all of that is completely removed. And your soul will be filled with sanctifying grace. And then you'll be in a position, Mark, to be able to start receiving the other sacraments. So you receive the sacrament of the Holy Eucharist, or Holy Communion, as it's sometimes called when you go up to receive at Mass on Sunday, or any day when you go to Mass. You'll be able to be confirmed. That is a sacrament that quickens and intensifies some of the graces that you receive when you're baptized. And chances are you would receive all three of those sacraments at the same time when you're received into the Catholic Church. And then you'd be in a position to receive the sacraments for the rest of your life. You can't right now because you need to be baptized to do that, but you can be baptized, and that would be the beginning of everything. And in the Catholic Church, Jesus not only established the sacraments, but also he gave us scripture and apostolic tradition, all the beautiful prayers of the church, calling upon the saints, you know, beginning with Mary and all the saints in heaven who are united to Jesus to pray for us, and all the angels to pray for us, etc. So it's a vast and glorious gift that the Lord has given to everybody. People have to receive it if they really want it. So I want to make that offer to you. It's not from me, but it's from Jesus, and that's what he would like for you. And one way to know that, Mark, is that if you look at the end of the Gospel of Matthew, you'll see at the very, very end, this is chapter 28, so verses 19 and 20, the very last thing that Jesus does before he ascends into heaven is he says to his 12 apostles, he says, go into the whole world and make disciples of all nations and baptize them, he says, in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teach them, he says, all those things I have commanded you. And then his final words are, and behold, I am with you always, even until the end of the age. That literally means even until the end of the world or the end of time. So what you see there is that Jesus established this church that he wants everyone, everywhere, at all times, to join. And the doorway, so to speak, into that church is through baptism. And then this church has the role not only of dispensing the sacraments, but also to relay to us, to teach us those things that Jesus himself taught the apostles, and he says that he wants those things to be taught in perpetuity to all the rest of us. So, that being the case, when you come into the Catholic Church, you'll in essence be doing what Jesus commanded there in Matthew chapter 28. Now, I realize there's a lot of ground to cover between where you are right now and that point, but I'll be here to help you. And all of us here at Relevant Radio will be here to help you. And I can tell you what, if you want to hold, Mark, after we are done talking, I can, if you're interested, and I can get your contact info. And I know people who live in your area. And if you want, I can have them get in touch and then maybe kind of steer you to a good Catholic priest who can give you some advice and start the process, if that's what you're interested in. So your call, but if you want, I can put you in touch with them.
Yeah, that would be fine. I'd be much interested in that.
Okay, fine. So when we're done, just don't hang up. Just stay on the line, and Jim will pick up with you and get that info. Now, in the meantime, I would like to suggest that you begin praying and begin asking the Lord to open your mind and your heart and to guide you. Let him know that you are seeking him, and that you want to know him and love him, and also spend time with him. So one easy way to do that is any Catholic church in your area that's open during the daytime, you can go in, I mean, or whenever it's convenient for you, you can go in, and you'll see there in the typically it would be in the sanctuary of the church where the altar is, you'll see, you know, they're usually made out of metal, typically gold. It's not gold, but it's golden color often. And that's what's called a tabernacle. Now, in the tabernacle is a cup, a metal cup, that is filled with the hosts that are distributed for Holy Communion at Mass on Sunday. You may have seen these little round wafers of bread. Well, at Mass, when the priest is celebrating Mass and he does what Jesus at the Last Supper said to do, you know, do this in memory of me, he said to the apostles. So when the priest does that, says those words, that formerly that former piece of bread and the chalice of wine, it still looks like bread and still looks like wine, but the reality of it has changed to being the reality of Jesus, glorified and resurrected. We call that in the Catholic Church, you'll hear Catholics say, body, blood, soul, and divinity. That's a way of kind of a formula for explaining what actually happens. And at the altar, that's what takes place. So what I mean by this is that if you were to go into any Catholic church and you wanted to spend some time with Jesus, he's actually there in the presence of what looks like bread in the tabernacle. And you'll be able to open your heart to him, talk to him, tell him, you know, everything on your mind, everything that you're thinking about, and ask him to guide you. And that's something you could begin doing even today if you wanted to.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Good. Well, I'm here every day, so I imagine there'll probably be some questions that will arise as time goes on, and that's good. I'd be happy to answer them for you if you want to call. So when we say goodbye in just a moment, stay on the line, Mark, and we'll get your whatever you want to give, your email or your phone number or both, and then I'll make sure that some people that I know and trust who live in your area can get in touch and maybe help guide you a little bit, okay?
Okay, that'd be great. I really had a soul-searching moment last night driving home, and I thought, I'm going to have to call Patrick and see what to do.
Yes, well, I'm glad you did, Mark. I really am. And I'm going to ask everyone listening right now to please say some special prayers for Mark, that the Lord will guide his path, and he will see where he has to go and how to go there. And thank you, Mark. I appreciate the call. Just stay on the line, and they'll pick up, and they'll get your info and pass it along to me. Thank you. Perfect time for us to take a quick timeout. We'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show, where you never know what you're going to hear. Talk about unpredictable conversations. I'll be right back right after this. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a new free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com. Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
Cyrus, have you seen all these volcanoes that are erupting all over the place? It's amazing.
I saw the one, you posted one, a week ago? And it, yeah. Like the river of fire,
yeah,
going down
and
the
that's
street.
That's La Cumbre. It's in La Palma, the island of La Palma in the Tenerife Islands. Or the Canary Islands, rather. Tenerife is one.
Are there more?
Well, I'm looking at Reuters just within the hour. A big volcano in Hawaii just went up.
Whoa.
Kilauea. I don't know which island it's on. No, it's on the big island of Hawaii, apparently. Kilauea. It says it's erupting in full swing. So it just seems to be yet another volcano around the world that's going. I don't know if that means anything, but it seems like lately there's been a real rash of these volcanoes. That's all. I was just curious if you'd noticed that.
No, I'm looking at it right now. It looks like another river of molten lava flowing down the mountain. Oh, that's amazing pictures.
I don't want to live near a volcano.
No way. Mm-hmm. No thanks.
NBA news, and we're going to go to the phones here in a second, but the NBA has announced that unvaccinated players who do not comply with local vaccine mandates will not be paid for the games that they miss. This is reported by ESPN. Axios has this story. San Francisco and New York, where the Golden State Warriors, New York Knicks, and Brooklyn Nets are based, have vaccine mandates in place that require players to be vaccinated before playing their home games. Players on those teams who are not vaccinated could miss up to 41 home games next season. 41. The NBA had previously proposed a vaccine mandate, but the National Basketball Players Association rejected the proposal. The NBA's Executive Vice President of Communications, Mike Bass, well, maybe for bass players, it should be pronounced Mike Bass, B-A-S-S, announced Wednesday the league's pay policy regarding vaccine mandates. Warriors forward Andrew Wiggins has denied, or I'm sorry, was denied a vaccine exemption last week and called his vaccination status private in a press conference. He says, it's my problem, not yours. NBA star Kyrie Irving. Is that how he pronounces it? Is it Kyrie?
You got me. Yeah, you got me. I gave up. Okay. I used to love basketball back in the day. I was from Oregon. The only team for the whole state of any sport is the Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. And man, I love those guys. And then one year, some rookie got pulled over and he rolled down his window as the cop rolls up and marijuana smoke just billows out of his car. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. And he hands the cop his rookie card as his ID. I was like, really? You know what? I'm done. Honey, I can't follow these guys anymore.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So it was just that?
Well, no, it was a few things. They were called the Jailblazers. They're a bunch of hoodlums.
So what you're saying is you can't tell me if his name is Kyrie or
Kyrie.
Long story short,
I have no idea what his name is.
All right.
Yep. I know LeBron James, and that's it. That's the only name I know.
So I'm going to go with Kyrie, even though it looks like Kyrie in Greek. But let's see. So here's his situation. He would lose over $400,000 per game, as per game, if he missed the home games, times something like 41 home games. That's how much he would miss if he doesn't get vaccinated. He earns $34 million annually. So I guess he can absorb that. Have you ever been played for $400,000 to play a game of basketball?
No. I think some of my hospital bills after being injured playing basketball have reached that amount.
I tell you what, if somebody were dumb enough to pay me $400,000 to play a game of basketball, I would play my heart out. And I'd probably be in the next emergency room bed over from you.
What are you here for? Same thing.
We could do the show remotely from the physical therapy center
in the background.
Yeah. So did you have some audio from, LeBron James?
It is LeBron James. So yeah, right. So this all came out, and he, you know, the NBA is going to not pay these guys if they get sick and they're not vaccinated. And I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but LeBron James has come out and said he's been vaccinated. And so I have a little bit of audio of that.
All right.
I think when it comes down for me, I can speak about myself. I think everyone has their own choice to do what they feel is right for themselves and their family and things of that nature. I know that I was very skeptical about it all, but after doing my research and things of that nature, I felt like it was best suited for not only me, but for my family and for my friends. And, you know, and that's why I decided to do it. So, but as far as you guys should know me, anything that I talk about, I don't talk about other people and what they should do. I speak for me and for my family, and, you know, that's what it's about.
Okay. I mean, I'm not finding fault with that. He made his decision, and what are you going to do? So people are doing different things on this issue, obviously, but I can only imagine that losing $400,000 per game would be an attention getter for anybody. Even if you're making $34 million a year. You've never made $34 million a year, have you?
No, you can add up all the money I've ever made my whole life, and it has not reached 30.
It hasn't reached $34
million. Yeah, not even close.
All righty. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Nicole in Wisconsin. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning. Good morning, Patrick.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Hi. Okay, good. Thank you for taking my call. I'm hoping that you can help me with a little confusion I have. Okay. I'm a religious ed teacher, cradle Catholic. I have six school-age kids, and we recently had a speaker come and speak at our parish, and the children who were eighth grade and up, still in religious ed, were attending. Mm-hmm. I'm a seventh grade religious ed teacher, so I came in at the very end of the presentation, but I had two of my own children who were attending. And they were doing adoration, and when I came in, and then when there was only like 10 minutes left, And when they were finished, the gentleman who was the speaker, who is not a deacon, priest, or anything of that nature, set his guitar down and went over and knelt down in front of the host and grabbed, and I don't know what the name of what the host is in,
the monstrance.
The beautiful gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you.
Right.
And he picked it up with his bare hands and walked it back to the back of the church and came out and said his last goodbyes and wrapped up his talk for the evening. And when we left, my kids, who've been to a few adorations, were like, that was different. Isn't it supposed to be a priest or a deacon? And aren't they supposed to hold special garment? And I was thinking the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know that that's right. So I asked my kids that were there, I said, did they say that this was actual adoration? Did you see, was the host inside of there? And they both said, yeah, it was. We were supposed to meditate, pray.
So do you want my commentary on that, Nicole?
Yes, because I'm not sure if that's how it's supposed to go.
Yeah, well, it's not. So I want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I like it when people give me the benefit of the doubt. So strictly speaking, no, that should not have happened under normal circumstances. The when it comes to liturgical celebrations like that, that's not the sacred liturgy, it's not the Mass, but it is liturgical in the way that it was, in the way that adoration is. And the ordinary minister would be the priest. Deacons also can do that. But if there's a choice between a deacon and a priest, the choice would go to the priest. Now, there can be some extenuating circumstances where, let's say, there is no priest, there is no deacon for 100 miles in any direction, and the people want adoration. The bishop can permit, or the pastor of a parish can permit, under some unusual situations, for a lay person to do that. So even though religious sisters are not lay people, technically speaking, in convents, for example, where maybe there is no priest available to do this, one of the religious sisters in the community can remove the host from the monstrance and put it back in the tabernacle. So there are circumstances where that can be done by someone other than a priest. But the only real way for me to know in this case would be to know whether or not, you know, was Father McGillicuddy there? Was there a deacon there? And if they were there, then either of them should have done this and not the layperson, the layman. Now, if they didn't know about it, I mean, that sounds like really a very bad situation, especially if there's a layperson doing this without any permission or authorization. So you'd have to ask and find out what was going on. It doesn't sound to me like this was one of those unusual situations that would require a layperson to do this. That's about all I can tell you, just knowing what you've said. You'd have to check with the priest to see what was going on.
Okay, yeah, our priest wasn't there, and we don't have a deacon. We're a small parish, but the priest lives right next to our parish. But if a layperson was to be given permission, should they be holding it without the garment, with their bare hands? Is that okay to do?
Well, it depends on circumstances. As you know, the custom is that the priest would wear what's called a cope. And the cope goes around his shoulders, and it's quite long, and he uses the fabric of that to hold the base of the monstrance. And that word monstrance, everybody, it just comes from a Latin word which means to show. That it has nothing to do with monster. It's just, it means to show. And that's why it's called it, because you can see the host inside the glass. So that's the custom. Now, there may be situations where it's not possible to do that. If it's, I guess what I'm trying to say here, Nicole, is the whole thing sounds irregular to me. It sounds like it was not done the way it should have been done, and more importantly, the way it could have been done. So you're right to be taken aback by it. The best thing I can suggest to you is that you just talk to the pastor and ask him, you know, that was kind of weird. Did you give him permission to do that, or did he do that on his own? And see what he says. But that's where I'll have to leave it. Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate your phone call. Let's go to Jake now, listening in Green Bay. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Patrick. I've called in the past, so I know you can help me with my question. I have been studying more into apologetics. encouraged by your show, and I picked up your pocket guide to Catholic apologetics, the quick reference guide, which is awesome, by the way. I recommend it if anybody wants to pull it out really fast. And I came to, I just have a question. When I came to the Jehovah's Witness section and it gave the different Bible verses to refute not taking a blood transfusion. And I was trying to, I'm just trying to connect the dots better. I'm trying to get it with not eating tainted meat and how that relates to a blood transfusion. So just looking for clarification and better connection.
Happy to. Now, I don't have that book in front of me, so I'm just going to go on memory. But my memory is that I was using this juxtaposition as a way that you can respond to Jehovah's Witnesses' objections to blood transfusions, which is one of the idiosyncrasies of that group. Now, two verses that come up are Leviticus chapter 17, verse 11, which says, "For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it for you on the altar to make atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that makes atonement by the life." And then in Genesis chapter 9, verse 4, it says, "But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood." Now, these two, among other passages, are verses that Jehovah's Witnesses will extrapolate from to say that if you receive a blood transfusion, then you are, in essence, offending against what it says in Genesis 9, that you're not eating flesh per se, but the reason you're not supposed to eat flesh is because it has blood in it. Therefore, if you receive blood in the form of a transfusion, then you are doing something contrary to God's law. And they attach that to what it says in Leviticus, which says that the life of the animal, or the human being for that matter, is in the blood. Now, medically speaking, that's not exactly correct, but there is a connection there. So when Charles Taze Russell, who was the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses, Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, as it was originally known, when he was concocting his concatenation of different doctrines, this was one. And so by using verses like these, he said, we can't accept blood transfusions. Now, does that sort of answer the question? Does that scratch the itch, so to speak?
Yeah, that clarified it more. You know, just more so on, you know, there. We as Catholics accept the blood transfusion because, you know, we're helping each other, and it's, you know, to so we can survive and keep living God's will and doing what he asks us to do. So,
yeah, and there's nothing sinful about receiving a blood transfusion, just like there's nothing sinful about celebrating a holiday or celebrating your birthday. Those are things that Jehovah's Witnesses refuse to do as well. And their reasoning is problematic because the way they will approach a topic is to say, well, the only time we see a birthday being celebrated is, look, it's, you know, like King Herod. And that was bad because he was wicked. So therefore, we won't celebrate birthdays. And the reasoning is that in the Bible, the only time that you see somebody celebrating his birthday, it happens to be a bad person. So then they take that and say, therefore, we're not going to celebrate birthdays because the Bible only shows a negative example of that. And they take, generally speaking, they take that same type of approach to things, and the issue with blood transfusions is one of them. It's just it's a quirk. It's an idiosyncrasy among many others. So, well, I'm glad I can help.
I appreciate your help. Yeah, definitely. Thank you for your help. And as always, you and Cyrus are awesome. So I appreciate all you do, and keep up with what you're doing with Relevant Radio. It does help.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. We all do. And we'll take a little time out and come right back. 888-914-9149. Got some YouTube news for you. YouTube just made a big announcement yesterday, and it's affecting a lot of people, and they're not happy about it. I'll tell you what that is when we come back. You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
We are back. Now, I know you use YouTube. Everyone uses YouTube. It's a big deal. And a lot of people have content on YouTube. And YouTube just made an announcement. Well, a couple things. Number one, the chief executive of YouTube, she came out and said that the company is deeply committed to free speech and that free speech is one of its core values. MSN is reporting on this.
Right.
That was my reaction. YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki, I think I'm saying it right, said that free speech remains a core value at the company, but added that there were multiple considerations taking into account their decision to basically deplatform a whole bunch of people. So here's how it's being reported by YouTube. This is their blog post. We're expanding our medical misinformation policies on YouTube with new guidelines and vaccines. On vaccines, crafting policy around medical misinformation comes charged with inherent challenges and trade-offs. Scientific understanding evolves as new research emerges, and firsthand personal experience regularly plays a powerful role in online discourse. Vaccines in particular, I have a friend, anytime I use the word vaccine, he corrects me. It's not a vaccine. Okay. It's not a vaccine. It's a experimental gene therapy. I can't even use the word vaccine with him because he'll correct me. So anyway, we're going to go with the colloquial description of it here. So YouTube says, our community guidelines already prohibit certain types of medical misinformation. We've long removed content that promotes harmful remedies, such as saying drinking turpentine can cure diseases. I've never heard anyone say that. At the outset of COVID-19, we built on these policies when the pandemic hit and worked with experts to develop 10 new policies around COVID-19 and medical misinformation. Since last year, we've removed over 130,000 videos for violating our COVID-19 vaccine policies. Throughout this work, we learned important lessons about how to design and enforce nuanced medical misinformation policies at scale. Working closely with health authorities, we look to balance our commitment to an open platform with the need to remove egregious, harmful content. I'm going to pause here for a second. But you know, Cyrus, free speech remains its core value, though.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So a whole bunch of organizations are being, their videos are removed. This happened to PragerU. It's happening to a whole bunch of people. And of course, it's all in the name of free speech, which is their core value.
Right.
Yeah. So if they don't like what's being said, it gets taken down. Now, it extends into other things like Russian disinformation, things of that nature. And I'm not saying that there isn't a role for policing your content to make sure that something that really isn't true, that shouldn't be on there. But this really comes across as a kind of fear-based reaction. And
fact.
You see it on, yeah, you see it on Twitter. You see it on Facebook where they censor content that they don't like and they just simply deem it to be misinformation. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. You heard on this program 2 weeks ago, maybe last week perhaps, when Dr. Sanjay Gupta, I think it was Sanjay Gupta, it was one of the Gupta doctors on CNN, asked Dr. Fauci about, well, what about all this new science now that's coming out like from Israel and some of these big studies that show that natural immunity for people who have had COVID but have not yet been vaccinated, it's like 27 times more robust in terms of the likelihood of them getting an infection with COVID is like 27 times less than somebody who's been vaccinated. And because the source of the question was not somebody that Dr. Fauci looks down upon, he said, yeah, you know, that's actually a really good point, and we're going to have a conversation about that. And maybe that will be, you know, something that we'll have to look into kind of thing. And if you had said that, if you had said that natural immunity is way better than getting a vaccine a month before that or 2 months before that, they would have yanked that off YouTube. That would that you might have your Twitter account shut down for something like that. Now, if you were to say that, because Dr. Gupta did and Dr. Fauci responded in a somewhat positive way to that, now if you were to say that, you would not be deplatformed. So this is part of the problem, is that it's capricious. And talk about moving the goalposts. I mean, we talked about this before, and I'll leave it at this because there's no reason to belabor the point. But in March, no, end of March or beginning of April of 2020, at the beginning of the whole COVID disaster, before we really understood what was happening, the Surgeon General on Twitter, he shouted it in caps. He says, stop buying masks. Stop wearing masks. They don't work. It's not going to help you. The size of the COVID virus is too small. It can pass through this. And we played even a montage of people on in the media. So CNN, MSNBC, government figures. We'll have to go back and find that again, Cyrus. But we played a montage of comments from people saying, oh, don't wear masks. It's not going to help you. These are all the same people who joined the mask religion shortly after that. And then we had people who came in halfway through the conversation and didn't hear everything. And so then they wrote the angry email saying, Patrick Madrid's telling people not to wear masks. When I was just simply quoting people like the former Surgeon General and Nancy Pelosi and others, Dr. Fauci included. So you see what's happening here? This is not just now happening. It's been happening for quite a long time, but it's continuing to happen where out of fear, apparently, or because it deviates from whoever gives them their marching orders about what will be said and what won't be said, they are continuing to just simply censor people who have views different from their own. Now, there's a certain fellow, you may remember him, his name is Carl Sagan, who was a scientist, an atheist. I'm pretty confident he's no longer an atheist. He's gone on to his eternal reward. But he was an astute man. He was an erudite man. And he had some really good insights. And I'd like to play one for you right now. This is him some years ago. Basically, although this is way before COVID and he didn't know about COVID, but he's reacting to a similar kind of situation in which some people want to shut down inquiry and skepticism about medical or scientific things. Here's what Carl Sagan had to say about that.
Science is more than a body of knowledge. It's a way of thinking, a way of skeptically interrogating the universe with a fine understanding of human fallibility. If we are not able to ask skeptical questions, to interrogate those who tell us mm-hmm. that something is true, to be skeptical of those in authority, then we're up for grabs for the next charlatan, political or religious, who comes ambling along.
Ain't it the truth? I mean, he's dead bang on the bullseye. And that's exactly what we're not getting right now. And if anybody asks a question or proposes a theory or interrogates the findings with skepticism, that person is shut down. And this, quite frankly, if you ask me, this is a big contributor to those. I mean, so the people, let's say that Joe Biden is running out of patience with. Or in Australia, the way in which they're cracking down so hard on people who are not willing to get the vaccine. I've got a little bit of detail on that for you, and I'll get to that in just a moment. Or these big tech companies, the big platforms like YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and the rest of them, where they censor anything. They take it down. They close your account, etc. There, I believe, these are the people who are largely at fault for exacerbating a situation in which people are hesitant to get a vaccine, those who are hesitant. They're just simply reinforcing the paranoia that may be rightfully, I mean, it may be right to be paranoid in some cases, but they're just reinforcing that. So by these authoritarian, draconian, fear-based censorship measures, they actually are handing the people who are hesitant, for whatever their reasons are, morally, scientifically, they don't want a needle in their arm, whatever it may be, they're amping up those people's reservations even more because it gives the appearance that they're afraid of the, you know, whatever the quote unquote truth is, that they're afraid of that coming out. Now, I'm not partisan on this issue. I'm not saying, you know, go in this direction or that direction. What I'm saying is that whether intentionally or otherwise, these big tech companies are actually making the problem worse because they are slamming down so hard and doing exactly the opposite of what Carl Sagan was proposing. There should be free and open inquiry and let the best ideas win and let the real science destroy the fake science.
You do not know what you are talking about.
I think I do. And if you, one thing we know for sure though, right, Cyrus, if you disobey the rules, you will get cut off. It'll happen.
So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
You do not know what you are talking about.
If you disobey the rules, you get cut off.
I know. Okay, so to that point, this being reported by newstrust.org, this is the Sydney News. Sydney, Australia, that is. Sydney residents who are not vaccinated against COVID-19 risk being barred from various social activities even when they are freed from stay-at-home orders in December. This according to the Premier of New South Wales. So Sydney's unvaccinated people are being warned of social isolation. Under a roadmap to exit lockdown in Australia's biggest city, unvaccinated people are already subject to delays in freedoms that will gradually be granted to inoculated residents beginning October 11th. The Premier said people who choose not to be vaccinated could be barred entry to shops, restaurants, entertainment venues. This is like deja vu all over again, Cyrus, because we were talking about this well over a year ago, 18 months ago, and it just sounded so ridiculous. Like, that could never happen. It's happening. A lot of businesses have said they will not accept anyone who is unvaccinated. Life for the unvaccinated will be very difficult indefinitely. Now, this is the governor, the equivalent of a governor of that state in the biggest city in the country. I've been there. It's a beautiful city, but everyone's living like prisoners there. The two-tier system designed to encourage more people to get vaccinated has been criticized for both penalizing vulnerable groups who have not had access to inoculations and for falling short of providing real incentives for those who are hesitant to get the vaccine. And you can thank Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, among other organizations, for making the problem even worse, because it sure looks like they're just afraid. And rather than deal with conflicting views or go the route that Carl Sagan promotes to have vigorous skeptical inquiry and let's find out what the truth is, rather than do that, they just shut it down. Pubs, cafes, gyms, hairdressers will reopen to fully vaccinated people on October the 11th. And those who are not fully vaccinated can't go there. Can't go into the bank. You can't go into the grocery store. It's all happening. So I just want you to be aware of that. And the thing that YouTube just announced is another example of it. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Allison in League City, Texas. Hello, Allison.
Good morning, Patrick. Good morning, Cyrus. I'm changing up the topic a little bit.
By the way, Allison, this is the Patrick Madrid show. It's not the Patrick and Cyrus show. Yet, anyway. Not yet, anyway.
Never.
I think we're moving in that direction.
Trademarking. I wanted to bring up.
Oh, we ran out of time. My mistake. Allison, stand by, okay? You'll be up first when we come back from this break. I'll be right back. Sorry about that. Na 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 na